Hello and welcome to Everybody Likes Music. I'm James, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend Ben.
Good to see you again.
And this week's special guest is NC Naptali from RG2 Community Radio. How are you?
Good morning, James. Good morning, Ben. Great to be here. What a lovely day.
It is a wonderful day today. I don't know what day it'll be like when it goes out, but it's
probably
a very
rainy
sunny
and horrible
day.
Yeah.
No, we think positive. We love music, and music brings sunshine. So even in October, it's going to be sunshining and it will be a lovely day.
Absolutely. Well, it's so great to have you on the show. So we'll start off just talking a bit about RG2 Radio, which is the community radio station. Do you want to just talk about it?
RG2 Radio is an internet radio, and it's a community station based. We do lots of different things. We play music in the evening, which everybody loves. And the quality of the music on RG2 is very different. We play soca, we play reggae, we play revival, we play R&B, we do the Billboard 100, we have lots of mix and blend shows, we have talk show Thursdays where we interview different people from the community, and my best favorite day is Sunday, because Sunday all the programs are just off the hook. 7 days a week we are on.
That's brilliant. And I love the sound of the sort of the variety on the show.
Variety.
And when we come onto your tracks later on, I love the variety that you've chosen those. But let's now go back to you and your career sort of in, well, pre-radio maybe. Where did your love of sort of music spark
from? My mom.
Your mom.
My mom. Oh, bless you. And we're always thinking of you. Mom had the biggest collection of LPs and 12 inches. So it was just like from here to there. And it was just all records. And I wondered, how did you collect all these records, Mom? Why have you got all these records? But Sunday was her music day. So she'd get up in the morning and she'd start with Otis Redding, all those types, Sam Cooke, all those type of old, beautiful singers. And as the day progressed and she was cooking and doing her stuff, it would get down to James Brown, then it would be Sparrow. And then what really turned my musical obsession was that she played Bob Marley. And I just got a feeling for Bob Marley at a very early age. And she played everything. Soul, calypso, reggae. She was born in the West Indies, so calypso was her thing. But she was also into soul, the real blues. And I even remember she had some stuff from Bay City Rollers, which I was quite shocked about. But she was very into everything, all musical genres. So I heard everything from an early age. Yeah, I did get into reggae, but I've always had the love of all different types of music because music, I think, is kind of cultural. You know, the parents don't know that they're actually passing down everything that they've learned and gained, passing it to you, and then you kind of pass it to your next generation. But they have their own things. They have their own, but they still listen to you, what you play. And I think I've got to give Mom 100% credit for my musical.
It sounds like she kind of just opened up your musical palette and just, especially those Sundays sound wicked.
I know, I'm sort of jealous.
Starting off mellow and just partying on into the
But that,
into
that
the
was
evening.
A thing that was very common in all black West Indian homes. We had this thing called the gram. You wouldn't understand. It's a gram. It was this big thing. And it had a deck inside of it with the needle, and it had the little tuners, and all the records were kept in there. And the gram was like, it didn't get played till Sunday. All the rest of the week they were working, and then when Sunday came, the gram would come on, and you had all these little 45s, which people don't even know about no more. A 45 with a hole in the middle. Why did they put the hole in the middle? But then you had to get the... And then my uncle, who we were living at the time, he used to hide the hole because he knew I would go and play the record. So then I had to learn to put my hand in the middle and make the record go round so then I could play it when they were out at work. The gram was mine during the week.
It sounds to me like you had to earn your listening to your music a lot more than setting it all up and getting it going.
What was your go-to? If you managed to figure it out and put it on, what would be your go-to?
That time it was a long shot, kicky bucket. Kicky bucket, and I was thinking, what does long shot kicky bucket mean? Because at the time you're young, and then because she used to listen to a lot of Sparrow, I didn't understand the lyrics until I got older, and Sparrow was talking about sex all the time. His tunes were just sex related, but he put them in such a way it was palatable and they could be played on the airwaves. But he had so much, everything he did was like, I was listening to a tune by Sparrow the other day, and he was saying, the lizard, because in the Caribbean, we get lizards. So the lizard came into the classroom, and all the class was watching the lizard, and the lizard made its way, and it ran up the teacher's leg. And Sparrow made a song about that. So he just made, his lyrics were totally uncontemporary. He was a total phenomenon. And even up to now, Sparrow is still one of the biggest calypsonians. Although he's gone, his records are still played. And everybody gets their mentor from Sparrow, just like a lot of people in reggae get their mentor from Bob Marley and the Wailers, you know.
So let's move on then from your sort of your childhood and your upbringing. How did that lead you into going into radio and sharing your music?
First of all, I got asked to play at the girls. I used to go to Sutton School, which is just past where the university is. And at that time, Sutton School was a boy and girls school. So the boys never got to see the girls until lunchtime or after school. And then even with the buses, the boys went home first and then the girls went home later. So you weren't ever able to mix. And then one of my friends who was leaving, she was older than me, she was in charge of doing the girls' school disco. So she asked me to play. And that was a big thing. And then I got all my records together and I went and we played in, it was similar to this, but it was the dining room. So they had a disco there and I came and I DJed and I played some of the latest records, more reggae, because it was like somebody came and said to me, this isn't a school disco, this is a blues. It's a blues party. And it was fabulous. And that was my kind of first inclination into DJing. And I did a good job. And then after that now, I got the bug. You know, you're DJing and you've got the people dancing and you're on the mic and you're toasting and everything. So I really got the bug. And then I wanted to get into sound systems, because after DJing, sound system was the next thing. So I had a blood brother who was Ruben Irie, and he had a sound called Sir Marcus. And I went with them, but because they were all older and bigger men than me, I wasn't getting no inroads. So I kind of left them and went with my own age group, and we started our own sound called King Solomon International. And that's where all the music from Mom and her learnings actually came into play. Because then King Solomon, took 2 years to build the sound. And then we played out the first time and it was absolutely crazy. It was just packed. And we chose the name King Solomon because King Solomon was the wise man and he also had lots of women around him. And that dance, we couldn't believe it. It was 75-25. All girls. So any man who came had a field day. And that was my introduction into sound system. And then luckily, my cousin who was in London, and he was in a very big sound called Mombasa. And he knew I was building my sound. And he said, you want to come up and play with us? And I said, who are we playing? And he said, Mombasa and Sir Coxon. Well, Sir Coxon's sound was the biggest sound in England at the time. And I'm thinking, play with Sir Coxon. Wow. You couldn't get better than that. You're coming to London, you're playing at Fulham Town Hall, and you've got two enemies, because Mombasa had a rising sound and Sir Coxon was the top of top, the best. So we decided that we'd have to do something to really make an impact in the dance. So we went in and listened to Coxon for about 4 weeks, and he kept saying, "Oh, Sir Coxon's sound is the only sound that plays Black Eura." We said, "Black Eura, okay. If we get a dub plate from Black Eura, when he says Sir Coxon's sounds is the only sounds that plays Black Eura, we're a little country sound. We, if I get that, that will really make a big impact in the dance." So I was friends with another friend who knew Augustus Pablo. So we sent to Jamaica and asked Augustus Pablo if he could get us a Black Eura dub plate. And he did. And that dub plate was called General, General de la Penitentiary. And it's got Sly and Robbie on the bass and the drums. And it goes, boo, 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 boo. And it was wicked. So then I said, "Ah, Augustus, can you do us a special just for you? Just you." And the special he did was called a Burial. So we played the General. And after the General, we're not going no burial. But Augustus Pablo was a melodica player, and one of the greatest melodica player there was. And to have a dub plate that was exclusive just to King Solomon, the night I couldn't wait. I had my little suitcase with my little dub plates in there, my four dub plates. And when we're in there now, we've gone up there at 5 o'clock, set up, and Coxon comes in, and he's got a table like that, and all underneath it, all you can see is dub plates and dub plates and dub plates and more dub plates. And then he comes in, and he just, because we're a little country sound, they've never heard of us, they just put their boxes in front of us, really taking liberties. So that's winding me up. So all night now I'm waiting, because I know what they're going to do. I've seen you do it every week. Coxon sound is the only one that plays Black Eura. So when it has to go in timing, so it goes Mombasa, then Sir Coxon, then King Solomon. So I know when I play the tune back on Coxon, he can't do nothing. It's going straight to Mombasa. And then when he comes back to me, I'm already free. So we get lined up now, and I hear him say, "Yeah, Coxon sound, I play the only one who played Black Eura in England." My hands are shaking. I open up my dub box, I put on the Black Eura, and we take a minute, we let them finish and we take a minute, my hand's shaking, I put the record on, and it goes, "General," and when General come on, do you want to see their faces? The whole place went crazy, because we've just done, a country sound has just played back something that you have just said, you have the exclusive to. Next minute, two Coxon's guys were standing next to us. And then after that, played the General, I played the Burial, which Augustus Pablo had done for us. And nobody in the world had that track at the time. He hadn't released it. He just made it specially for us. He released it 2 years later, but we had it. And when we played the two of them back together, the whole dance, which we'd already taken two coach loads of people from Reading to come and support us. So everybody went mad. Coxon was vexed. And then when we finished playing, Mombasa came in. And Mombasa took the pee out of Coxon. "Oh, are you only playing Black Eura? How come a country song don't play Black Eura?" And it was brilliant. That was one of my best ever nights, really.
Oh, that sounds immense.
So that's one of the, General's one of your top five songs on our playlist.
General.
So that must be such a strong memory for you then.
Oh,
so,
yes. Yeah. I can feel it. Like, even now, I can feel my hand shaking that I've got to go and play this tune against Sir Coxon, who I love. No, Coxon, I used to go and listen to them all the time because they played the best music. They had music that was coming out from Jamaica that nobody else had. So if you wanted to hear exclusives, you went to Coxon. So to actually play an exclusive back on him was a special, very special night. Very special.
So we've talked a bit about Bob Marley, and you've chosen Get Up, Stand Up as one of your songs. Why did you choose that?
When I look back on life, I just think I'm so lucky. You know, being in the right place at the right time, having family who were in the music, having my mom who just loved music. And this first Bob Marley album was this man with like afro, not combed, just rebellious, just cool. And one evening my friend goes to me, "Let's go to see Bob Marley." "Well, I ain't got no money." "Let's go and see Bob Marley." "I ain't got no money for train fare, ain't got no money for tickets." "Come." We got to the train station, we bunked the train station, we got to Paddington, we bunked the underground, we got to Lyceum Ballroom where Bob Marley was playing, and there was thousands of people outside who wanted to get in and couldn't get in because they didn't have tickets, and it was absolutely rammed inside. And it was three of us, me, Sasser and Fish. Well, somehow, Fish goes, "Let's go." I said, "Go where?" He goes, "Make a run for it. Straight through. If the bouncers come, duck, go, and I'll see you inside." Next thing I know, he's gone. He's made a run through the front door. Zoom got under the bouncer. Once I saw him do it, that was it. There was no stopping me. Through the door, in, duck the bouncer. Next thing, we're in. What? And I couldn't believe it. Bob Marley's on. I'm inside the Lyceum ballrooms and there's no black people. It was all hippies, and I didn't know Bob Marley had such a white fan base. It was off the hook. I'm coming into this party, this concert, and there's hippies sitting on the floor, not standing up. It was fabulous. And they've all got bags of ganja. This is not real. It's not real. How can this be in London? And it's all hippies on the floor, and they've got black bags of ganja. Everybody's smoking. The place is off the hook. So we went, the Lyceum ballrooms is the floor, and then the service quarters is right at the top. So we went right to the top of the service quarters, and you could see this fantastic big picture of His Imperial Majesty Haile Selassie I in gold on the stage. I'd never seen that before. This big picture of this black king with his gold crown, and he was all ingrown, and my body started to... And we got higher, and as we got higher, the smoke was getting higher. I'd never seen nothing. I'm 15. I've never experienced nothing like this. Then we got to the top, and it was... Ansel Collins and they were doing the warm-up. And then Bob came on, and it was mystical. He came on, and it was like, he was a very small man. He was smaller than you, Ben. No, Ben, he was smaller than you. But on the stage, he just looked like this 10-foot giant. And just the way how he had the people in his hands and all the songs, and they just rolled them out. And then all of a sudden, this big black bag just got thrown onto the stage, and Bob ran and picked it up and took it backstage. So we're right up high now, and we can only see the what they call the stage background, but we can see over it. You can't see right over it. And then halfway through one of the songs, Bob just leaves the musicians playing, and he's gone backstage. And we're sitting at the top, and all we can see is this big thunderstorm of smoke rising and coming up. And then when he came back on, he was like mystical. He was in a vibe. And I don't know if you've ever seen it, but he's got this pose when he's at Lyceum Ballroom where the guitar is behind his back and he's got his arms outstretched. And it was just magical. And he just stormed the night. It was so fantastic. I can't tell you how the experience that it gave to me to see this man who could sing and had the beautiful rhythm and movement, and the band worked with him, and his singers were there, and his wife was there, and just the way he played with all of us. And then when it was finished, nobody moved. For 15 minutes, nobody moved. Everybody just stood there. And then he came back on and he said, "Another money me I gonna have to pay for breaking the curfew, because you have a curfew. And the people wouldn't move. So he came back out and he'd done another 15, 20 minutes. And they were just stamping. And it was so mystical. It was a privilege. I really, sometimes you don't know that you're lucky to have experienced that. And I really was a beautiful night. And that's how Bob Marley and reggae music has helped to change my life.
And does it, do you think when you listen now to sort of reggae, to Bob Marley or to any other sort of reggae artist, does it take you back to that night when you hear it, or does it do something else?
Bob always takes me back to that night because I got a lot of my teachings from him. He taught me a lot. He opened my eyes. He told me to look to Africa to see what's going on in Africa. Don't just, and then he actually taught me that don't look in front, don't see what the book's showing you, because the book might be showing you something and there's loads of things behind the book. Excuse me. So he made me look and start to seek, not just what you were told in English, but to be looking to Africa, to look to African traditions, to find out how that come about. Because we actually grew up in the West, so my schooling has been all English, so I know about King Henry, I know about Queen Elizabeth, but I don't know about none of the African kings. I don't know nothing about the African history, and Bob opened my eyes to that, so yeah, he's helped to form me as a person. And when I hear him, there's nobody who can compare to Bob Marley, but right now, I would say not one of the Marley families, but Chronix is growing into the type of Bob Marley type figure.
So we could talk about, you know, how we can improve Western schools and teaching black history for a long time. But as we're a music podcast, I'd just like to ask you, do you think that there's a place to kind of use sort of black artists as and the music of black artists as a way to introduce children of all cultures, particularly children who want to look into their own culture, and sort of music as a gateway into then them opening up their education?
You've got it there, James. Music is education. I would say for myself that learning and finding Bob Marley has changed my life, because if I didn't find my Bob Marley at that time, I probably wouldn't have been a Rasta man. I probably wouldn't have been how my life is shaped, because after seeing Bob Marley, I went to Ghana. I helped to build a school. I helped to build a dam. Voluntary, not going to work for money, but he taught me that you have to go and experience things. So he did change my life, my life, and what I presumed life was going to be. And he's taken me on a musical journey that after I realized that Bob never used to stay nowhere for more than a day or two. He'd be in London, then he'd go to Brighton, then he'd go there, and he was always on tour, and he was always on tour all over the world, and he smashed all the records. In Ireland, the biggest ever show is Bob Marley and the Wailers. The biggest ever show. And it's like that all over. And even in Zimbabwe, when Zimbabwe were getting freed, the prisoners were breaking out. And all the band ran and left to the hotel. And then when they got back to the hotel, where's Bob? Bob was still there, next to the prison, singing for the prisoners. And that's the reason why the prisoners broke out. Because they wanted to hear Bob Marley. But the band had left, because they got frightened. But Bob didn't have that fear. They're not going to come to kill me. They want to hear me. So he stayed and performed. Then all the band had to go back. Because he just had his acoustic guitar playing with them. And that's the difference. You know, it gives you courage and it opens your eyes. Music, I think, should be in all schools. Different forms of music. Because I think culturally it opens you up. That's my viewpoint.
Has that inspired you then with RG2 to really bring that community sense around?
That's what, well, luckily I started in radio in London on a pirate radio station. Thank you very much, Sky FM from Harlesden Radio. That gave me my training. I used to go up and I used to do the graveyard shift. That's a 12 o'clock till whenever on a Sunday night. But I didn't know that I was gaining listeners. Because my show at that time was specifically just roots and culture. And I used to also read some parts of the Bible in the show. And like where Shepherd's Bush is right next to a big prison. I forget, Willesden Prison or something like that. And I didn't know we had loads of people that used to listen. And then one night a woman rang me up and she said, thank you ever so much. Anytime my baby wakes up and she hears your voice, you put her back to sleep again. And that was kind of weird, you get me? And then one time the next person rang up and said, MC Naphtali, Mawan, thank you, because you helped me to be a Rasta man from listening to your shows. And he just put the phone down. You know, you're astounded that by your presence and your giving, you're helping other people to make decisions on their life. And that was the fantastic bit that taught me that radio is not just a musical tool. Radio is an education. Radio is a gives people opportunity. Radio gives you education. So we call it musical education. You know, and that's what I found on my program. And after that, now I came back to Reading, and I wanted it to be the same in Reading. But we're very hard in Reading because we have the BBC monitoring station in Caversham. So as soon as you put out anything, they find you straight away. So all our pirates got clapped down, and now we've been very lucky to get RG2Radio.com, which is a internet radio station. And it goes all over the world. And people are listening to us in Kenya. People are listening to us in Chile. That was the best one. I had somebody listening to me in Chile. And I think, I don't know nobody in Chile. But they found us. And they like what they love what we're playing. And that's what music does. It touches the parts that nothing else can reach.
That is a brilliant way of putting it. Really brilliant way.
Amazing view.
It really hurts me to say this, but we're almost out of time because I've absolutely loved this. I had these questions all prepared and then I've just torn them up in my head and thrown them out because this has just been brilliant. And I think we're definitely going to have you on again.
Oh, 100%.
At some point. So can you tell our listeners what have you got coming up that they can get involved with?
In October for Black History Month, there's loads of events. If you go into the Reading Literature, Reading Borough Council, it shows you all the things that are going on for Black History. But we've got a special event coming up on the 23rd of October at the Jazz Cafe, which is now the Select Car Hire Stadium, but everybody knows it as a Mad Stand. The Jazz Cafe is going to be off the hook. We've got 8 RG2 DJs playing, and we've got the Family Connection sound, we've got Lady Banton, we've got Echo Ras, we've got Mikey Roots from Family Connection, we've got DJ Stacey Love, we've got Master K, we've got DJ Gitch. Do you want any more? I will be there, but I won't be taking part. I'll be just putting on my dancing shoes and having a great time with a great mix of music, all types of music. And come on down to the Jazz Cafe the 23rd of October from 8 o'clock till 3 p.m. and you'll have a musical night that you won't forget. Thank you, James. And thank you, Ben. It's been a pleasure talking about why we love music. We love music because music gives us inspiration. Thank you.
MC Naphtali, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Thank you for coming on.
Respect.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, yeah.
We will see you very soon.
Respect. Yeah.
If you enjoyed that episode of Everybody Likes Music, don't forget to subscribe to the channel below. And follow us on Spotify, where you can find all of the music that we talk about in the podcast, as well as some of James's and mine's favourite tracks.